Welcome back, everybody. Adelba and I are back to talk about episode 2 of Leverage for the homecoming job. According to IMDb, which is fallible, it's not always right, episode 2 came out on December 9th, 2008, so 2 days after the pilot aired.
Wow.
Which doesn't seem...
I seem to recall a much longer delay between the pilot airing and the next episode.
I know, that's what you said last week, and unless like the second one came out and you weren't aware or I wasn't aware, I don't know.
One other thing to note about this episode, because I also went down a little bit of an IMDb rabbit hole, because the guy who played the Marine baddie in this one, the ex-Marine who has a very distinctive knife fighting style, I am sad to say that he died in 2016.
Oh no.
Yeah, he apparently had a blood clot from a hip replacement, and he was only in his like middle 40s.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that sad? So
you don't think it was a defibrillator?
Yeah, I wasn't getting it with it. Lee Rarriman was his name, and so, you know, just very, very sad thing to note, but figured out. He was an excellent bad guy. And I looked him up because I'm like, you know, hey, this guy has done this a lot. I think this is his bread and butter, is this type of role, this sort of gigantic bad guy. And he had been a football player and then went from pro football to the acting gigs, and sort of seemed to work a lot based on his IMDb profile. But yeah, very, very sad, just especially on the day when we find out that Dolores Reardon of the Cranberries died today. Yeah, so it's a little weird because these people are both a little bit younger. Well, he was about my age when he died, and Dolores is a couple years younger than I am, so that's like, whoa.
Yeah, like a way to feel your mortality. No.
A little bit.
We're still very young. It's not cool.
Yes. So anyway, sorry to start the podcast off with a downer note.
The episode starts with kind of a downer. So,
oh, definitely.
Yeah, so this one was, again, directed by Dean Devlin and written by John Rogers and Chris Downey again. It was the second episode to air, but it was the sixth one that they wrote and shot. So I think you kind of see that in the way that the actors work together.
Yeah.
So instead of like in our first episode going through the plot point, which got a little lengthy, but I couldn't help myself. I thought I'd just do a quick summary and then we can just dive into, I've got like bullet points, things that I thought were really interesting and I'm sure you do as well.
Sounds good.
So it's the crew's first official job together as a team. And they're trying to get justice for a young reservist who was injured in Iraq by a private contractor. Their plan is to extort money from the company to pay for Corporal Perry's rehab and treatment and surgeries. Mm-hmm. But that quickly changes tactics when they find out that he was actually the witness to something bigger that the contractors are trying to hide, and that they're eager to silence him. Which, yeah, just really brings the stakes up really high, really fast. I love finding out what everybody's been up to, kind of, and like what they've done with their share of the money, and just getting to see Sophie with her horrible acting.
Oh my god.
I'm not an actress. I've never been an actress, but I could have done a better job at that audition.
Well, that's the thing. The funny thing about that is that audition scene, as a former actress, one of the things, it's kind of almost an inside joke for actors, which is that, you know, if you're taking on a role, you're supposed to, you know, similar to if you're a writer, and I know you're a writer and I'm a writer, you think about a character's backstory. You think about how that changes their motivation. You think about, you know, who they are. And the idea of taking it to this extreme level for a commercial is such a good joke. And by the way, that is John Rogers sitting there in the audition room.
Another woman, one of their associate producers.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember her. But that whole like taking it to the nth degree and the parting shot about, you know, Peggy killed her first husband. it's just like, oh, I mean, it's And what's funny is that I think that this speaks to, this is a spontaneous thought on my part. This kind of speaks to why Sophie is such a bad actress when she's on stage, which is that she's overthinking things 120%. And when she's on The Grift, like she's in the middle of The Grift and she's like, wait, plan a hunch. And yeah. And so it's her skill at improvisation is really what makes her an outstanding grifter actress, you know. And so that was just, I just love that. That was just very funny because, I mean, they do a lot of sort of inside jokes about actors and they do that. But yeah, they continue to go back to that, like all of these people know that kind of an actress. And you could see like on John Rogers' face, he's like, oh God, another one.
Like, I've sat through this audition and I wrote this scene and
still. Yeah, exactly.
That producer, co-producer, her name is Rachel Olsham, I think how it's pronounced.
Yeah. Okay.
Just give her a...
But yeah, my notes were just basically all caps, her audition. That was like all I needed to write to myself about this because I haven't seen this episode in so long.
Yeah, when her phone rings and he's like, no, you should get that.
You should get that. Well, and the thing is, I mean, I haven't seen this episode in so long and it's not as burned into my brain as the pilot episode is. And I had forgotten that there's that whole montage that they had gone their separate ways.
Yeah.
And that there's a montage of them going being in their old jobs on their own.
Yeah, it's like the Avengers like.
Yeah, yeah. And Elliot with the guy with the gun. I mean.
Yes.
Your mom. He's so unfazed.
He's like, it could be important.
It could be important. Is that you or me? It's like,
I love scenes like that, like action scenes like that where they stop and there's just kind of a, oh wait, like let's have a mutual like timeout.
Right.
Let's both get our phones or whatever. I just, that kind of little beat of humor.
Yes.
And then punches him in the throat, which according to IMDb again, fallible, who knows, is a killing shot. Like that guy might be dead. He kind of just folds down to the ground and Elliot's like, oh yeah. Okay, cool, I'm there. I'm not busy or anything.
Yeah, right. No, I didn't do anything.
And then Parker stealing a Van Gogh.
Of course.
So good. But I love them, Parker, Elliot, and Sophie walking down the hallway. They don't know where they're going.
Yep.
And they're kind of talking about what they've done with all their money. And Parker, again, is just like, well, I didn't do anything with it. I just have a safe or I have a vault or whatever, an account.
Swiss bank account, I think it was.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Swiss bank account and just... I don't like things. I like money.
Money, right? And then that how that repeats later on in the episode when they open up the container with all the money, and she's just like practically orgasming at sight of it. It's hilarious.
Which wasn't in the script at all. Like her reaction that was all Beth Reese Graff. Just this is
that's awesome.
This is what she would do, and that like little smile, and she's got her hands out, she turns back to look at the guys.
The little smile.
And then she's just framed on either side by them and then the open doors of the storage container. So good.
Yes. So let's talk about some of the things that, again, we're seeing either first or second glimpses of that were just consistent over the entire run. So for instance, you know, we've got Elliot's, you know, it's a very distinctive sound. It's a very distinctive fighting style. You know, his and I love irritated Elliot.
Well, that's good because we've got a lot of it.
I love Grumpy Elliot is one of my favorite things of all time, especially
like
when
I'm asking if they're having like a being weird contest, like a creepy contest.
Yes.
Like Hardison Parker about the money.
And Hardison's seriously.
Yes. So you hear the gag and then he gets pushed off a building.
Yes. I just remembered something. Gravity. Yes.
Which would be me. Like, if I was on top of a roof, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to do this. Oh, that has been me. Because when I went skydiving, I was like, yeah, let's do this. We're going to go skydiving. I was in Australia. I was young. Like, let's go. And then you see the first person fall out of the plane and you're like, oh, this is real. And then you get up and you're sitting at the door and the door is open and you've got your feet hanging out. And then you're like, oh, but this is me. They have a camera to take your picture right before you go. So I'm like turned back around to see the camera. So I look cute in my picture because, you know, it's important for me to look cute in my selfies. And then my tandem person, because I didn't do this by myself, my tandem person, Max, then he like tips us out. And I was like, oh, wait, no, I don't want to. And then it's too late. But it was okay.
Well, you're clearly here. Spoiler alert. Yes, you lived.
I lived. I told Max that I loved him, and I still do, like 15 years later. But yeah, so I totally feel for Hardison up on that roof remembering gravity.
I am terrified of heights. I would, no, never. Oh, yeah. Never. No, never. And another thing that I love is that when Elliot goes on the grift, especially early on, he's not very good at it. And he's...
What? You don't think he was good when he's getting the guy to... Like, he's trying to get him over hors
d'oeuvres? It was... But the funny thing is, and this stays pretty consistent all the way through. Whenever he goes on the grift and he's trying to charm someone, he gets this kind of really kind of cheesy...
Oh, like, smarmy.
Cheeky, cheek-popping-y grin on his, like, hey. You know, and it's just... It's like... Oh God, that's such a tell.
Yeah. He has it there, and then he puts on, they call him his like grift glasses.
Yes.
At the end when they're in the shipyard, he has they're like mine, like not like horn rim glasses basically. And he's like, oh, let me get you your key.
Oh yeah, so great.
Yeah. Oh, but I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we did have another consistent thing. We had Elliot disarm two guns.
Yep.
The first one when he punches the guy and then answers his phone. And then the second one when they knock out the contractors in the hospital and they're back at the Verge headquarters, which we should totally talk about.
We need
and
to talk about that, just, yes. He
disarms it right there before they keep going through the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a thing with him. He'll never leave around in the chamber. He'll never leave a clip in a gun. He's just, he's not having it around.
And he doesn't do it as like, he doesn't make a point of it. Like,
no, it's almost a reflex.
As a character, yeah, it's second nature, which is so great. Because you can tell it's just something this character has been doing since
forever.
The beginning. Ever. Right. He doesn't need guns. He doesn't like guns. And nobody else should be. And to like take away that second chance of somebody pulling a gun on him.
Yes. So let's talk about Leverage Headquarters, because oh my God, does old Nate not look like John Larroquette?
Yes. Which is great because of the librarians.
Exactly.
Right?
So now he's on the librarians, and it's almost like, you know, it's almost like televisual inception over here. In
yes.
This,
yes. You know, like art becoming life, becoming art, becoming
the
life.
Matryoshka of you know.
Yes.
Sorry, she's drinking her tea or her water or whatever, and I'm making her laugh, and she's going to get water all over the laptop.
Yes,
but
an in-joke with the props people. They painted it as a joke, like that wasn't, they didn't tell them to do that, and then they were like, this is perfect.
Yeah, because it is the kind of thing Hardison would do.
Definitely. I love that Elliot's like, did you paint that? And he's like, yeah, I've got many talents.
Yes.
I love the fact that Hardison painted it.
But yeah, I mean, it's funny is they've got this whole thing that, you know, they've got these offices and, you know, and you know, the backstories, and they've got, you know, this incredible conference room.
Yes.
And
it's
then,
it's the con.
Like, oh.
I was like writing notes and I was like, oh, it's too good. It's too good.
But womp womp.
And then you get the tour from Hardison, and in the audio commentary, they say, this is when we really rely on Aldous Hodge to give us a lot of information, like a huge info dump, and make it interesting.
Yes, he
Which
can
is
do
so
it,
true.
And Mark Shepard can do it.
Yeah, yes. I would listen to that man explain football to me, and I won't let anybody explain football to me, because I don't care.
Agreed.
So, yeah. And then just the walk around. And like the moving track shot.
Yep.
Ugh, so good. And then you get to go into the conference room.
But the thing is, I mean, the point that I wanted to make is that, you know, they've got this incredible commitment to this thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, by the middle of the episode, we get the team basically saying, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, cold
feet. And what's so funny about it is, you said cold feet. My notes were basically like, this reminds me of like every romantic comedy ever, where the you know, whoever says, well, I'm never falling in love, or, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, oh, you're doomed.
Right? Like, oh, just one more job.
Yeah, yeah, right. Sure. Just one more potato chip. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, because they all start out, they're like, you know, the first job, they got to screw over a big business, you know?
Right.
And they had that high. And they just had a lot of fun. There wasn't a face to the stakes besides themselves getting screwed over. And now they've got this young man who's already injured.
Right.
And he's now, they saved his life. And now, like, if anything happens to him, like, that's a whole different level. Like, shit just got real.
Yeah.
And can we handle that? Like they said, like, you know, Hardison's like, you know, I just did everything online. Nobody got hurt, which not completely true. And then, you know, everybody else, like, I just stole paintings. I never hurt anybody. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, I hurt a lot of people.
I hurt people, yeah.
Many people. But yeah, and they have to figure out how to cope with that. And the only way for them to cope with it is for Nate to yell at them.
Pretty much.
When they, in the commentary, they say when they were filming that, because they'd filmed 6 episodes together and the actors as a unit were so strong, they had to have Timothy Hutton just like swearing at them off camera so they can get that reaction of them being like kicked puppies. And they're like, oh, okay.
Right, yeah. Well, what's funny too is this, it is the first, if I recall correctly, instance where that beautiful chemistry that Hardison and Elliot have when they're looking over the congressman's house renovations, and you can see Elliot getting the idea. You can mm-hmm. see Hardison either picking up on it, like knowing what he's about to do, or just trusting him to run with it.
Yeah, well, he's already dialing the correct number.
Yeah,
who he knows
yeah,
Elliot
right.
wants to call.
That's right. So it's like these guys are, you know, even though Elliot still gets super grumpy at him and. You know, is going to for many, many, many episodes. Possibly, I can't even remember to the end.
All of
the
episodes. Every episode.
Every episode. Hardest.
It becomes
seriously
good natured.
Yes.
But yeah,
yes.
Always.
But yeah, that little glimpse of these two could be really, really simpatico and work yeah. really well together.
That just like both of them, like the slow smiles on their faces, and they're just like looking at each other. I'm like, yes, this is amazing. Yeah. So good. And then I like. And you get more of this as the seasons go on and the relationships between the characters build. But we had little moments, like beats of Hardison and Elliot. And then we have Hardison and Nate sitting and eating the popcorn and watching the con.
And by the way, yeah, I'm watching con on C-SPAN. Which yeah. As someone who lives in Washington, D.C., I mean, I just find that hilarious. Mm-hmm. But also the whole Hardison's reaction to her, you know, getting in and drop-in thing, it has a sexiness and all of that. That had to be an ad lib between the two of them, yeah. or at least something had to have been because I just loved Nate's response. Like, you can dial that back a little bit.
I know, and then it's almost like you have to watch a couple times to hear everything they say to each other because they're not saying it really loud. They're kind of just like under their breath, like, yeah, this never leaves this room. Like, nope, just yeah, between yep, the two yep. of us, you know?
In the vault, which, yep.
Yeah, it's so great. And I want, so Hardison obviously set up all of Leverage HQ at Nate's behest, which I think really already speaks to this like mentorship that happens between the two of them throughout the series.
Oh yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, right.
But I want like a little mini episode from that time in between, like when Nate like was Hardison just like hanging around Nate all the time and Nate just gave him some work to keep him busy. Like I want to know
yeah,
what they were doing in between. And because they were very comfortable with each other just having a beer, just chatting.
Right. They did clearly spend some time together.
Yeah.
I want to know what happened. I bet you there's fanfic out there.
I'm sure.
But yeah, that would be good.
No, anyway, send it to me. Go ahead. I love that. One of the things in my notes is Corporal Perry's eyelashes.
Oh dear.
But like, let's talk about Corporal Perry. So the episode starts with camera footage, like obviously he's got his own camera and he's videotaping something for his fiance back home, and then you kind of get to see the shooting happen in real life, which is kind of shocking. And it's all based on like real YouTube videos that Chris Downey and John Rogers found on YouTube when they were researching something else, which is just horrible that you can go on YouTube and kind of see like this war happening in real time. And
yes.
Yeah, so then it cuts to the hospital, which is an actual real life hospital that they shot in. And Jack McLaughlin, who plays Corporal Perry of the eyelashes, is an actual Iraqi vet.
Huh.
And all of the guys in the backgrounds going through rehab and stuff, they were all Iraqi vets as well.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, like I just kind of love that reality that it gives to the show. And they say in the commentary that, you know, there's nothing like having people telling you who've been there telling you that you're talking about it wrong, that you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Keep it real by having real people there.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love that guy. And Jake McLaughlin is now, he's on the show Quantico.
Oh.
So it's like, oh, what else is this kid in? Oh, he's on something right now. So go.
Good for him.
Eyelashes again. They're very pretty. They're very pretty.
Yes. Yes. And so let's just kind of address the whole political purchasing of politicians.
Yes, that's intense.
Because what's funny is that I think at the time this was written, I know that John Rogers and anybody who wants to go back and look at the blog he was keeping at the time called Kung Fu Monkey, he would take viewer questions after an episode aired, and he would answer them, and he would get they always got a lot of pushback on any given plot, like that's not real, you know,
that's
ludicrous, that couldn't happen. And what's really kind of sad now, not kind of sad, definitely sad, is that plot, it seems almost painfully naively small.
Yeah.
Given what we see now.
Yeah, they even say in the commentary that the kickbacks that the congressman was getting, just like to have like cheap bids and things done in his house, they kept scaling that back because they're like, well, we don't want to be too over the top. And then like right after the episode came out, there were all of these like exposés of people so much more, like so many more kickbacks, payoffs and stuff.
Yeah. So it's just, it's interesting, you know, in that the episode very well, I think, and yet at the same time seems a little naive.
Yeah.
Or the stakes are kind of, and those stakes are, seem kind of not small, but like, well, of course, rather than the
not
usual.
Surprising.
Yeah.
And not a shock.
Yeah. And why does Timothy Hutton need to try for a Boston accent and do it so badly when he's pretending to be congressional aide? I just
they say in the commentary, they're like, what accent is he using? And they're like, he's like a New England Katharine Hepburn. They're like, oh, he's doing the 1930s. Like he has a 1930s accent.
Kind of, but it's kind of a little Kennedy-esque, and then he kind of sometimes he's like he doesn't have quite the right long A, and it's just
no, it's bad. Like
it's too bad.
I'm not from that area at all.
I'm originally from there, so
why are you doing that?
Yeah,
Boston for 24 hours one time, and nobody talks like that there.
No, nobody talks like that. I mean, the Boston accent is real. Trust me.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
One of the things, I mean, my husband and I are both from New England, Salt House, and sometimes, you know, the accents, especially of Norm Abrams and what's his name? Silva.
Yeah.
Those are just, I mean, they almost, not Bob Vila. Silva, the contractor.
Oh, okay.
They almost, I mean, they almost seem like comforting and homesick making for us. But yeah, that sort of quasi Kennedy, Hyannisport, whatever. No.
It's the very tonally, like, Yeah, I love when they described it as Katharine Hepburn. I was like, yeah. Yes, because I'm always like, what are you, how are you talking, Katharine Hepburn? Not that I don't love you, but.
Yeah, well.
No, nobody else.
The transatlantic accent is a thing. If you Google transatlantic accent, there is a YouTube explainer on why everybody in the 30s and the 40s talk like this. And a lot of it has to do, apparently, with radio. And the fact that early radio did not produce bass tones very well at all. And so in order to be heard, in order to achieve a high level of diction and to be very clear, the thing about that accent is it's very, very easy to determine the words that are being said. It's not mushy at all. No. So you always hear every single word and understand every single word. So that people were actually taught to speak this way. So,
all right.
So if you want to go to YouTube and get your explainer, you can do that.
Excellent. Ooh, I really liked all of that. I don't want to, like, should that stay in? Should that be cut?
Why not?
A long little, no, I'll put a link. I'll find that video. I'll put a link in the show description.
Sure.
So you get the beginning of his ridiculous accent in that party scene when we have mm-hmm. that line about buying a United States congressman is one of the best investments a corporation can make.
Oh God.
Which Sophie doesn't break very often in her character, but
you can see her
when he
grossed
says
out.
That she's like, ew. Like,
yeah,
she almost steps back, like, but definitely her chin comes down, her head comes back, like she's like, bleh, like gross.
And Hardison listening in says, I just opened my mouth a little bit.
He's like, and I'm a professional criminal, and that's wrong.
Yeah.
I love it. And the pickpocket scene that they do when they lift his RFID card was all done in one take. Like, they're so smooth, like her just lifting his thing.
Just taking it out with her teeth.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Which and then, is like really sexy,
and handing it off under the tray.
Under
and
the tray.
It was just beautifully orchestrated. I love
and
watching.
And she even
had
to say,
"Garçon,"
like,
yeah, "Garçon."
Excuse me, for garçon, real? Come here. I love it.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, I love the coincidentalness of it. As soon as they get all the information, they've cracked. They've got him to say all of the phonetic sounds they need to break into his safe, and Hardison's gone through all of his files on the computer that, oh, they're gonna knock this guy off. They're gonna kill the corporal. Then they immediately are like, we're going to the hospital. And that's when it's all going down. Like, just immediately right then.
Yeah, the ability to...
Perfectly.
The ability to for them to just roll with stuff and improvise and
yeah.
incorporate new information.
I loved Elliot, you know, stealing the white coat so he can kind of masquerade himself as somebody who's supposed to be in a hospital, but being caught out by that amazing doctor.
The doctor was wonderful.
She's so great. And then he notices the Crocs that she's wearing.
Right.
And realizes he didn't see those other guys wearing Crocs. But she didn't question those two burly men who just walked by. Only Elliot.
Yeah. Well, Elliot does look a little clueless in that scene. It's like,
that's
oh, what floor am I on?
Yeah. He's like, I'm in podiatry. Like, and yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I think like a defibrillator to the chest would really, really hurt you, right?
I'm not a doctor either. I would assume so.
Yeah. But then that guy is just back at it. He's in the shipyard a couple days later.
Yeah.
I would definitely need some like workman's comp and like I'd be staying home for a while.
I'd want a nap.
Yeah. Definitely want a nice vacation. A little
yes.
nap.
Yes.
Oh, I liked we already covered Hardison and Nate, you know, watching Parker steal the bill. But the little civics lesson that you get from Nate, I was like, oh, is this mm-hmm. an episode of Schoolhouse Rock? This is great.
Yes.
Learning how a bill becomes a law.
Right.
Okay, so once they've figured out that things are more than what they thought, it wasn't just some cowboy shooting off that got the corporal injured, then we've like tracked the shipment and they're listening in on phone calls and stuff, and they realize that they've smuggled something into the shipyard, only to discover it's...
Money.
Money. And yeah, Parker being in love. Oh, Elliot knocking out the webcam with
the
just
rock.
A rock.
Yes. I'm sorry, but it wasn't close enough for you to punch.
And I love the little, like, kind of, what are they? They're like low self-esteem things that Hardison says, because he's just like, oh, yeah, you couldn't just go punch it with your big punchy muscles, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, he's not feeling that too much. Yeah. Poor guy. And I think
he'll be okay.
Well, and I think, you know, that's the thing about these characters is that they see each one of them, and we touched on this in a previous episode, but they each are very, very good at what they are good at doing. And it's the old saw of, to a man with a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. Mm-hmm. You know, Hardison sees his solution as technology. Elliot's solution is violence.
Yeah. Like in like gaming parlance, they min-max their skills.
Absolutely.
So they spent all of their, you know, their points on like building up one skill set, and the others lack because of it. But through working together, they all kind of build up their skills. So like,
yeah,
Elliot gets better. Everybody gets better at conning and like grifting, and like Hardison teaches people hacking things and stealing. Everyone learns to steal. It's so good. I mean, learning all these new criminal skills.
Yes.
So good.
So excellent.
Yeah. Yes. It's just my niece, when I was rewatching the series a couple years ago on Netflix, and I lived with my sister, my niece would come in the room. She's like, are you watching your bad guys be good guys? Because she's like 4 or 5, and she's like, what are you watching? I was like, well, this is a show about bad guys who become good guys by doing their bad guy things. And she's like, oh. And so she tried to come watch, but she was 4 or 5, and she did not have the interest level. But
yeah,
it was so cute.
That's adorable.
Those are bad guys doing good things.
So
now they have to, as Sophie says, this is way too much money to steal. And Nate has to remind them, you're not stealing it. You're going to give it to somebody. Like, you're going to do good with this.
Right. This is not yours.
And they're like, oh okay.
That
beat of, oh, we're good guys now. And then this is the first time we get to see Nate and Sophie as playing a married couple.
Oh, that's right. That is right.
That's wonderful.
And as a piece of misdirection, it is perfect too.
Yeah.
Because there is something completely train wreck unlookawayable about a couple either having an argument or, you know, any strong emotion between a couple. It'd be either, like, you know, like there's a scene in Captain America: Winter Soldier where Black Widow has him kiss her because, mm-hmm. you know, people will look away. And but there's something about that has the opposite effect when people are arguing. It's like, mm-hmm. I know I should look away, but I can't. I mean, this is, you know, these two people are just tearing each other to shreds.
Right? Like, oh, I watch TV for this. This is like happening right here.
Right.
And the reality of someone just getting mixed up in the shipyard after they've gotten off a cruise.
Yeah, right.
It totally happened. And John Rogers said it did happen to them. Like, he's like, this is 100% could happen to you.
Holy wow.
Yeah, like, oh gosh, can you imagine, like, you just got off a cruise ship and there are like mountains of these ship containers, like, no, shipping containers. And they're so good. And this is it's only in the second episode, but it's like the first time that we see Nate come out from behind the curtain of being like the mastermind and take place in the con itself.
Right.
He has to make a split second decision during the party to mm-hmm. join in.
Mm-hmm. Well, he wouldn't have been able to in the first episode because, you know.
Yeah,
because
Victor
because Dubenich knows it.
Yeah.
That's why they had to get Sophie in the first place, is because all their identities were burned.
Yeah, but I don't know if he would have. I wonder, do you think that was his idea from the beginning? Was, I'm going to have a part in this and not just getting, like, setting the plan up and getting the wheels in motion, but like actually participating?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think from a narrative perspective, new, not from a Nate perspective, but from a writer perspective, he would always have to be, because otherwise you would just be pretty much wasting.
Yeah, that was
a great actor.
Yeah, no, I think it was 100% there from like the writing aspect, but
yeah,
for the character, because he makes that decision in the party. Like, I think he's just there to observe, and then he walks by with the thing and just like drips the dip on his back,
drags him. Yeah.
All right. So, I love. So they blow up the shipping container.
Yep.
Freaking everybody out. But it's actually the neighboring container. And they brought the congressman in because he has to come pick up his mahogany flooring samples himself, or shipment himself. And so everybody kind of converges, including all of the reporters that they've called.
All the news media.
Who are actually real local reporters.
That's
because
awesome.
They said, like, it doesn't matter how good an actor is, they don't act the right way. Like, they don't act like a journalist. They don't. On camera, they don't look right.
Interesting.
Which I thought was great, and reminds me, have you seen Parks and Rec?
I have seen most of it, yes.
Okay, so Purd Hapley.
Yes.
What's the word, Purd?
Yep.
Purd Hapley, the actor who plays him, is an actual journalist. Like, he's an actual anchorman. And he's been in so many movies and TV shows. Like, he'll show up on, like, Supergirl.
But yes.
He always plays an anchorman. He always plays a news person. And that's like in his thing with his agent is, he's like, yeah. So he's in all these different universes. And so in my head, those are all one universe. Like, Parks and Rec exists in the same world as Supergirl.
That's amazing. I love that.
So, I think that's really neat that it's almost every time you see a reporter in Leverage, it's played by an actual local reporter.
Well, that's interesting too, because one of the things I noticed is that, you know, the one journalist that who was sort of, they were focusing on, she has, you know, she's got a microphone that reads CNN. And I was sort of looking at that with my head tilted, thinking, don't they usually have to change those and like make, I don't know, have to, but you know, they usually are like, you know.
Yeah. It's because they're in the same, is owned by this Time Warner, who also owns CNN, so they could use it.
Right. Okay.
Which I only know because they said so in the audio commentary. That would not have even like pinged my radar. But then I was looking at it again, and the one next to it is HBO, but it's not the HBO logo.
Oh, yeah.
It's like some generic HBO.
That's funny.
That's great. And then we talked last time about the way that they shoot things. So, you know, you have like the tracking shots and the zooms and everything. And
the quick pans, yeah.
The quick pans. And here in that last scene with the guy from the contractors and the congressman, like, I didn't even bother to learn their names because they're just horrible.
Yes.
Mole people. I hate them. Is you've got this like kind of tightening, circling shot around them, like this, the noose tightening.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they start to talk their way out of it, but then you get everybody gets the
phones ringing
footage, which is very Sherlock before Sherlock, BBC Sherlock. So I see what you did, Stephen Moffat. You totally stole that from Leverage.
Well, that's funny because John Rogers was totally stole from Stephen Moffat too, at least in terms of ideas, because he.
Doctor Who references.
It was not. Well, there's the Doctor Who references, but also Stephen Moffat wrote Coupling, which, of course, Gina Bellman was on.
Yeah, Gina Bellman.
And there is the episode later on where it was the con that they talked about with the dagger, where we see the same events from everybody's different perspectives, because they were
the Rashomon job.
Thank you. Yes, the Rashomon job was kind of a lift of a Coupling episode. Where they did,
but isn't the Rashomon job like Rashomon is based on something else?
I believe
there's an X-Files episode that does that as well, called Spoilers.
Yeah, I mean it's not an uncommon thing to do, although it's very it's very difficult to get right, I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that John Rogers mentioned that he sort of because of Coupling, that was that was what he was thinking about when they wrote that particular episode.
So they get the money out using this amazing like trompe l'oeil effect of hiding it behind a picture,
right,
of an empty truck, which they came up with the idea, and John Rogers was like, "That's never gonna work. We're gonna like I don't think this is gonna look real,"
right?
Until they did it, and he came up to inspect it, and he thought it was an empty truck.
That's awesome.
So, It was actually just the printed paper. Okay, but my question, as I was watching it, because I watched it 3 times over the last 2 days.
I just watched it once this morning.
Well, I watched it once, then I watched it like just back to back with the commentary, and then this morning I was typing up my notes and I just had it on in the background while I did dishes and stuff. Because you don't see the quick change. Do you think that they, and this is heavily implied, but you don't see it. So did they take all the money and put it in the car and put it in the truck, and then that's the empty truck. It's the trompe l'oeil the whole time.
Or were there two trucks?
Were there two trucks? Did they take the money afterward? I can't assume that they did, because then the money is, the money in quotes is in the container. Is that also a trompe l'oeil? When did they get the money? And that had to be, they needed like a forklift.
Well, here's
pallets full of money.
Here's what I think it might have been, is that they got the money before.
Oh.
They got the money before, and the elaborate explosions and the arguments and the blah de blah were merely to get everybody into the right place at the right time to do the sting.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. Okay, thank you. Because it didn't even, I didn't even think about it until I was watching it like the third time. And I'm like, wait a minute, but wait.
I thought about it too. And I was
like, the cups.
Yeah.
You know, like, where's the ball?
Three card Monty, yeah.
Yes, thank you. I was like, what am I trying to say? Then when they like do the reveal at the hospital with the doctor and Corporal Perry, and her face, like her just shock.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when she says like this line, like they could have just ended the episode on this line and I would just be like in tears and so happy. When she's like, the world doesn't work this way.
And he so says, change the world.
He puts his hand on her shoulder and he's just like, so change the world. And I'm just like, yes.
Yep.
Yes. And this whole episode and this whole show basically is the reason why, one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast, but like, this episode specifically with like the government implications and the line about buying a congressman, with our like political landscape and the way the world feels right now, it just feels like there always have been so many people taking advantage of situations like this. Like, it's just so prevalent. And this show is like an antidote to that. And this line here is like, so change the world. Like, we're not all super skilled hackers and grifters and thieves and hitters, but there are little things you can do. Like, you don't have to just buckle under the weight of all of this. Like, you can be other people's leverage, you know?
Right.
And that's like part of the reason I wanted to do this whole podcast, is that just like watching a show like this kind of like rejuvenates me. I'm like, you know what? Like, they're not always going to win. Like, there are people out there doing good things. We can be people out there doing good things. Right. And in the commentary at the end, John Rogers says, because there's that great shot of all of them just kind of like grinning to themselves, mm-hmm. as everyone's exclaiming over all the money. And he says, altruism is addictive. Like, mm-hmm. they've gotten this taste of it. They had fun doing it the first time, but this time around, they really see, like last time they saw a check, this time they're seeing all these people.
Right.
And they know all the good that's going to happen for these people because of what they did. And they're like, all right, one more job. Maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's,
no, absolutely.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. But that's not the end of the episode. Because then.
No, because he has to drive off in his Tesla.
Yeah. At the beginning, you know, we're like, oh, Nate gave all of his money away except for the money that went to building the headquarters and, you know, getting all their backgrounds sorted. And then he's like, oh, well, I did buy a new car. I did buy myself something. And he's like, oh, I bet it's a station wagon.
And it was Dean Devlin's Tesla, I think.
I don't think so. Because in the commentary, they say, you know, the day the Tesla was there on set, everyone wanted to ride in the Tesla.
Maybe
he was keeping it quiet in the commentary. Or maybe he got one because of it.
Maybe he got one because of it. I know that I have a good friend who's a Googler and a high-level Google dude. And he got a Tesla as a commuter vehicle because he could use the HOV lanes in California.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure they have a plot right there. there at Google HQ.
He took me for a spin in that thing, and they are very cool and kind of terrifying because it's instant acceleration. Because the engine doesn't need to like ramp up. It's boom, you're moving, and it's like
going into warp drive.
It is. It's really. I mean, and please, my friend has always had a kind of a lead foot anyway.
Have a helmet?
He's a really good driver. Actually, he's done all kinds of like Formula One training and all that kind of jazz. Because he's a very rich dude who can do this kind of stuff. But yeah, I know, right? But yeah, it's those things are a little scary. Yeah.
Okay. At the end, there's this beautiful song playing.
Yeah, I had forgotten that.
It's Joshua Radin or Raiden. I'm not sure how we say his name. The song is called Winter. It's beautiful. You can look it up. It's on Spotify.
Nice little acoustic.
Yeah.
Singer songwriter type of number.
I swear that I've heard. So, that's the end of the episode. Are there any thoughts that we didn't cover?
Probably not.
Yeah, I think we went over things pretty well. Okay, so according to IMDb, episode 3 is called The Two Horse Job, which we know takes place on a racetrack. It's an amazing episode. But according to the DVDs, the third episode is The Wedding Job.
Huh.
So,
which one
to watch next? And then
see
The Wedding Job on IMDb is listed as episode 7.
I recall that as being a later one too, but we've proven today how unreliable my memory could be.
Yeah,
let me see how it's presented on Amazon.
Okay, and what my thinking is, because sometimes TV like networks do this, is that they won't always air them in chronological order.
Right.
So they might have intended for The Wedding Job to be episode 3, and then the network was like, yeah, but we want to introduce this certain character that we all know is going to show up in episode in The Two Horse Job. Maybe they wanted to bump that up. So
episode 3 is showing the Two Horse Job actually as on Amazon.
Okay. Since that's probably how most people are going to be watching it and not the DVDs. We'll do the Two Horse Job next.
Okay.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you for joining us, Adele. Do you want to remind everyone where they can find you, to follow you?
Oh, sure. If you want to follow me and see all my silly things and some all caps ranting sometimes, I'm on Twitter at _Adele, Adele, Buck, Buck. Also on Instagram, same handle. Yeah. And hopefully you'll get to read my book someday.
Someday soon. And I'm Christina, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Librarian Stee. And Stee is STI, like Christina. Yeah. All right, that's it for us today. We'll see you next time with The Two Horse Job.